stretch out, that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes, and tell me if you take my place. Under the cover of my skin,
welcome to episode number 188 of the Inside Rome podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. I was about to say just 88 then, Croaks. I forgot the 100 in front of it. It's been a while we've been doing this show. Got to remember to say 100 beforehand. Welcome to this week's episode. Welcome to my co-host is up in Canberra, Bradley Croker. Welcome to you this week.
Thank you, Brady. How's life in Echuca?
Moama Bradley. I live in Moama on the New South Wales side of the Echuca-Moama border, and it's
better well known though, Echuca.
Echuca is, but when one state's in lockdown and the other state's not in lockdown, we really need to get these things right at the moment. Things are weird here, Croaks. It's always weird when we have border stuff going on, but it's okay. It's all not affecting me too much, and my day-to-day life is all still pretty similar, but things are good. Actually welcomed in my first niece into the family today, Carly's brother. Well, he didn't have the baby, but him and his wife had a child at 4 a.m. this morning, so it was a pretty exciting day for us. So they'll definitely not be listening, but well done to those guys for producing a child. And yeah, things are good. My other co-host is with us, but his microphone's not turned on yet because he is traveling in a car. He'll be with us for in about 10 minutes' time. Julian Spencer, we'll hear all from him shortly. But Bradley and I will kick the show off and start by recapping our weeks, Croaks. So kick things off.
All right. So Monday, 31st of May, I didn't work on the Monday. So I went to the gym at about 11 and then did my two laps of Mulligans in the afternoon, averaging 4:15s. I wore the New Balance RC Elite again. I just seemed to pull up really well. They're pretty much dead now. I think they've done like 400 kilometers, but they've been a great training shoe. So that was Monday. Tuesday was track, and the main session was six continuous sets of 600 solid, 200 jog, 200 hard, 200 jog. So for me, the aim was to run like the 600s at about 5K pace, jog 200 anywhere between sort of 50 seconds and a minute, and then run the 200 more like sort of 3K, or between 1500 and 3K pace. So it's seven kilometers worth of work, which I averaged like 3:26s for the whole session. But the 600s were like 147, 146, 147, 148, 144, and 143. And the 200s, most of them were 33s. The last two were 32 and 31. So it was a pack of about five of us sort of sharing the lead.
Can I just ask, what do you split 400 in for a 147, 600? I'm being lazy not working out like myself, but that's...
Well, 148 is 72s.
Okay, so you're rolling it just a bit quicker than 3 minute K pace.
Yep. But often you get out, for these reps, you sort of get out a bit quick through the first 200 and then sort of dial it back a little bit. But yeah, it was like a solid session. The last set I was on my own, the youngsters sort of popped a little bit. And then what we've been doing is every like few weeks, because we have the track booked for an hour and a half, and we've been getting up to 40 people, we've now started setting up time trials after the session. So like a few weeks back, there's a guy that I coached that wanted to try and crack 22 minutes for 5K. So when we started our cool down, we pretty much paced him to a PB for 5K. And so now we sort of put a schedule out for people. So last week, for example, there was about four or five guys that wanted to try and break 18 minutes. So after I finished this session, changed shoes, probably had between 5 and 10 minutes break, and then basically ran an 18-minute 5K. So they kicked it down. So I ended up running like 17:37 or so for the 5K, and then just did like a 10-minute cool down after that. So it ended up being a pretty solid night on the track. So, 7Ks worth of, relatively high-intensity intervals off a jog recovery, and then a 17:30 5K.
That workout. We did something similar a couple of weeks ago in Shep where we were doing 400s, 200s, and it's just enough time to recover, but you get to work at those two different levels of work through two different gears.
And it creeps up on you as well, because there's a big difference between jogging 200 in 50 seconds to a minute versus just standing around. And that's what I think a few of the young guys sort of struggled with, was just the strength at the back of the session compared to if we're just standing after 400 meter reps, they're fine with that.
Yeah, and another level when you start floating that 200 or float every sec. Maybe you jog the one after the 600, but then you do the 200 hard, and then you float the 200 before you hit the 600 again. That could make that really hard, that workout.
Yeah, so most of the jog recoveries were 52 to 55. Got a bit carried away on the last set, 47 seconds. So and then we've got another time trial in. Like not tomorrow, but then the week after, which is going to be paced at 16:30 5K.
So do they just get there later and then just
exactly?
They don't do the workout.
No. So that's why we sort of have a bit of a schedule plan, so people know in advance what times it's going to be, and it's a few guys will get together and say, hey, we're about the same standard. Do you want to try and have a crack in a couple of weeks at this? And then look, I'm happy to do my session and then pace. Like, obviously, there's no one there that wants to break 15 minutes, but if they're doing that, then I wouldn't do a session beforehand, and I'd probably just pace. But it builds good
camaraderie between the group, especially when people are, pacing each other and jumping in and out different weeks.
Yeah, and then even if people aren't pacing or not part of the actual race, the other people are cooling down from the session, so they're getting plenty of cheers along the way. Mm. So that was good. We had four guys, I think all of them broke 18 minutes, which was good. Then Wednesday was my midweek long run. So I did just over 21K at 4:11s. Felt actually really, really good. So I went in the afternoon, but felt really good doing that run. Then Thursday, gym in the morning, just 45 minutes in the afternoon at 4:13s. And then our Friday session, it was back to sort of pro hours. So there's a group of four of us that have been sort of training regularly on a Friday morning. So we meet at 9:30, and we met out at Stromlo, but there's a primary school cross country race on, and you could not get a park. We had to park a kilometer away from the track because of just, it was packed. Like the year that they had national cross there, it wasn't an issue getting a park then, but then Northside ACT cross country champs for primary schools, you can't get a park anywhere. So we warmed up, we headed over to Mount Stromlo. There's a road that goes all the way up to the top where there's an observatory, which that all got sort of burnt out through the 2003 Canberra bushfires. And so the session was 6 3-minute hills with 90 seconds recovery. So I think it's about 3.5K to 4K from the bottom to the top. So if you run 3 minutes up, 90 seconds back down, turn around 3 minutes up, you sort of just snake your way, and you pretty much get to the top by the end of the 6 3-minute rep. I've only done this session once, but it's a pretty popular session in Canberra. I know Philo's group's done it a fair bit before, and Dick's group have done it as well. But 3-minute hill reps are pretty tough. It's very easy to cook yourself after sort of 90 seconds. And I found the first two reps pretty tough, just sort of getting used to it, but then sort of dialed into the right rhythm for the last three or four reps. And the gradient sort of, got a little bit easier towards the end.
It looks like it's pretty consistent though. Pretty much 35 meters elevation on each effort.
So I reckon if you rode, like if you went up Mount Stromlo, it probably averages out at about 4% the whole way up. But there's a couple of sections where it's a bit steeper, but then there's a couple of sections where it's a little bit flatter. But it's a good session, like, you know, working pretty hard. And then obviously a nice cool down. It's pretty much all downhill back to Stromlo. So that was Friday. Then that afternoon, got some treatment and then went out for a run, 4:13s. I felt it's amazing what hills do for you in terms of activation. It's like I've done a pretty solid session in the morning going up the hills, but my legs, I don't think your legs get quite as banged up because you don't have the impact when you're running up the hill, but the activation you get from those hills, I felt pretty, you know, pretty cruisy running 4:13s in the afternoon for that. And then Saturday, just an hour. It was bloody freezing here on Saturday. I went and ran at 12 o'clock and it was, I don't know, it was like 3 degrees or something like that. 4:15s for an hour. And then Sunday was fun. We met down at Lake Burley Griffin. There was six of us. And so Trav is training for Gold Coast. And so he had 36K, including 10K at sort of marathon effort in the last sort of 10K. So I said I'd do the 10K with him, and then there's a few guys that I coached that were going to do a slightly quicker long run with maybe some like 2K reps thrown in after sort of 10K. So we all ran together for the first 45 minutes at sort of 4:12 pace, and then we did 3 2K reps between 3:40 and 3:30 pace with a kilometer sort of 4:15s as recovery. So Trav didn't do that section. We left him for that. And then I joined him for his 10K tempo or 10K at marathon sort of pace, well, slightly quicker than marathon pace. And so we did 34 and a half or so for the last 10K, which got me to 29K, averaging 3:49s. And then for some reason I reset my watch and then we jogged 15 minutes back to the car. So I ended up being 33K for the morning.
You reset your watch because it looks better on Strava before you jogged back to the car and let the blow out of it. That's exactly why you did it.
Well, if I was worried about it looking better on Strava, I would have actually done a separate one for my 10K.
Nah,
I reckon 3:26s.
Strava love. People like 29K at 3:50 over 10K at 3:30, 3:25s.
Yeah, but then my 15-minute cooldown was 4:06s, so my average pace wouldn't have actually slowed down much. So 33K at 3:52s probably looks better than 29K at 3:49s.
A mistake in hindsight, hey? You should have kept it rolling. Maybe. Strava's definitely, do you notice that? It's definitely biased towards, like, the steady, longer stuff.
A little bit.
Like I can do a good track session, get no kudos, no comments, but then you do like a little bit of a quicker long run, get a shitload of kudos.
Don't get me started on Strava. We had this like off air sort of chat about just, you know, it's just another form of social media. And I reckon there's a lot of negatives about Strava and this stuff. So I'm not always
people comparing themselves.
Yeah. I just think people just are so caught up on what other people are doing and putting stuff up to make themselves like look better than what they are, and it's just it's a whole nother topic. Whereas back in the day, you used to just do your training, you didn't know what other people were doing, then you just stand on, then you get on the start line and you see where you're at. But now there's just and I think people tend to just overtrain because it's about, you know, getting kudos and, you know, being a bit of a training hero at times. So anyway, 138K for the week, which is one of my biggest weeks in a while. But it was good to do a long run like that, considering I'm going to be doing some marathon pacing in a few weeks.
Yeah, have you got any communication? What do the lead female want? What pace?
Still haven't heard.
I've been hearing some rumours.
Have you heard?
2:30.
Yeah, okay. I bumped into Brad Milosevic just before I started the 10K hard bit yesterday, and he said that I thought he said that the women were looking at like 73 and a half or something through halfway.
2:27 dead.
Yeah, but that's, I don't know good.
Who's
I don't
know who'd be running that. Millie yeah. Clark.
But then when she ran Gold Coast a couple of years ago, like she went through halfway in 74:30 or something.
She might be hit up. She'll be in action at Launceston half this week, so we'll get a bit of an indication there.
But I tell you what, if it was going through 74 and a half, 75, there would be a massive pack because there'd be so many people out there on the 2 hour 30 bus.
You mean of men as well?
Oh yeah, men as well. Yeah, so there'd be a pretty big pack at that.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. So yeah, I'm surprised. I'd be very surprised if they asked you to go out at 73.
I know Trav's hoping that it's sort of around that 74, 74 and a half. So I'm essentially pacing him as well.
Just strategically put on the brakes, risk the payday to help out your mate from Canberra.
Yeah.
Ladies and gents, our co-host has just messaged us and said he's ready to go. Welcome to the show, the coach of Ali Pashley, Olympian Ali Pashley, Julian Spence. Welcome.
Thanks, mate. Do you get to call yourself an Olympian if you haven't been to the Olympics?
That was one of my questions. I think you do. Do you? I think once you're named, you're an Olympian. But if you get injured and don't get to race.
Yeah, I think you've got to line up to be an Olympian.
Oh, I reckon you should get the Olympic rings, Moose.
Yeah, you should get them tattooed on you, Moose.
Do you think so?
Yeah, well, you got that Chico State from spending... You got the Chico State tattoo and you're there for 2.5 weeks. You put more time in the alley than Chico State.
I have heard of people who have gone to the Olympics but haven't competed that have got the Olympic rings on them.
Oh, no. What, like physiotherapists or something?
Yeah, I have. I can't remember exactly who it was, but I know when I was working at Swimming Australia at the time, and it was somebody that was involved with the swimming team.
Someone washing the bathers. That wasn't an athlete.
Could you imagine doing that?
What about, are you going to put OLY in your Twitter handle now, Moose? Because you're an Olympic coach.
Good. Instagram, I get some more followers. I need something. My career's going the wrong way in the athlete department. I need something to really get back on top again.
I think this is good for you. You're back.
Found my niche.
So do you get to go as a coach to Tokyo?
You could put in applications for that, but I don't think... There's obviously a quota. I didn't put an application in because I didn't think it would be worth going and then having to quarantine and all that on the way home. Because Bree's like, that would be sort of mid-August coming home, or early to mid-August, I guess, August 7th, be coming home, so around the 10th, 11th, and she's going to be due 1st of October. So okay, I probably don't want to go even near that sort of time frame.
Good call.
Yeah. We'll go to the next one, Paris.
Yeah. And maybe the one after that too.
Yeah.
How are things up at Noosa?
Noosa's good. Weather's been real friendly lately. Training sort of for the athlete up here has been going well. It's been good. Like it's been, obviously it's a bit of a distraction being away from the lockdown. There's a lot of weird energy in Victoria right now. We feel it through socials and talking to family and friends back home. I don't think it would be good energy for an athlete. A lot of anxiety down there, and so it's been really helpful to be away from that.
Everyone's just fed up, like in the staff room at school today, like just you can just feel it amongst adults. I'm talking not so much about the kids, but everyone's just like over it. Like
There's only so many regressions you can take, like so many times it can reoccur, and then we're back in this thing of hanging on in the number every day.
And then like same thing, I found myself checking the number today at recess, so at 11 a.m. and you just see it and you're like, oh, hands in your head, like you just it's just that cycle of just checking it every morning just to see what it is. To see because you just want some hope. And then the thing is, you check it yesterday morning after the long run and it's 2, and you start punching the air, you're like, beautiful, we're out of this. And then the next day you're seeing it and it's 11 and you're like, oh, this lockdown's going to keep going.
Yeah, there's the unknown is the hardest bit of it all, the unknown. What's going to happen? Are we going to be okay? Like, I mean, depending on what your interest is in it all, whether it's a business, whether it's work, whether it's traveling to a race, seeing family, whatever, there's an unknown around it all, and that's the hardest bit.
Yeah, and different people got different interests that they're kind of following along at. How's your running going? How's your Achilles?
Yeah, it's not great still. So, look, long story short, I got an MRI last Monday. The MRI showed the tendon was perfectly intact, pristine, they called it. with a lot of inflammation in the fat pad behind it. I had a Zoom consult with my sports doc, who he actually referred me onto a sports doc up here that I just saw right then. And I just sort of basically got out of the appointment, and he suggests that it's not fat pad at all. It is the tendon, even though it's not showing on the scan. So look, I'm pretty frustrated. I'm confused. I don't have a real pathway. No one's given me a good answer. And that's, again, the unknown. That's the confusing bit. Like, for me, I just want a pathway or something I can work towards. But I'm getting pretty over it, to be honest, because I run a bit, it starts to feel better, then it gets a lot worse. And then I start to sort of make a decision. Oh, I'll go get a scan, get a bit of hope based off the results of the scan. And then the consult today sort of stripped the hope away again, that it was an easy fix. It's not behaving like a typical tendinopathy, and it's not showing up on a scan, but there are elements that are behaving like the tendinopathy that the doctor today has mentioned. And so, yeah, the pathway forward is based around strengthening, but strengthening causes pain, stirs it up, and feels like it makes it regress, which psychologically is a difficult thing to do, exercises that make it feel like it gets worse. So yeah, it's shit for me at the moment running, especially when you're like surrounded by a lot of positive energy with running. But there's more to it than that, and that's sort of being selfish up here. We're here for a different reason, which is to look after Ali.
That's, yeah, because what's this, 4 weeks now? Like, it's, you've kind of done the time, and then it just, like...
Oh, it's, yeah, since it must I first be so started, frustrating. 6 weeks time.
6 weeks. 6 weeks. Shit. Yeah, it must be super frustrating.
The problem is, though, as you know, like, the Achilles is one of those where it's not necessarily time, like, time off, it doesn't always heal yeah. it. And as Moose said, like, strength is what everybody prescribes, but then getting the loading, it's a balancing act between, like, loading enough for it to get better without overdoing it. Like, it's tough. So feel for you, Moose.
Yeah, man. Look, it's only been 6 weeks. People have got a year, have injuries for a year, and I think if I was back home with more distraction, I would be less obsessed with it. But because we're up here on a training camp, you start to feel like you want to run more. I've been doing still in the gym, swimming, that kind of thing, and on the bike a bit for workouts. So, yeah, like, running consumes you. It is my entire life, work, like, multiple jobs concerned with running. All my friends now, pretty much runners, wake up, do running, talk about running. And so it, you need to escape. Like, I feel like it's almost time to escape from it somehow. Turn off social media or something, because that's just filled with running as well.
Well, you'll be a dad soon, Moose. That'll be a good distraction.
That is true. That's what I was thinking. I wonder if you can kick that process along. Give me some. How do you do that? How do you make him come early?
Yeah, don't think that really happens. Give him some time to cook in there. So is there a path forward now? Like, what happens now? You just keep seeing this sports doc and he gives you stuff to do, or...
Got another scan. He said the scan I got was poor quality, so he wants to see it better from a different MRI machine and a different reporter, like someone reporting on the results. So that's the next thing now.
So you have to go to Brisbane for that, or you can stay
Down the sunny coast, but just down south, not the most convenient one.
Yeah, okay. Have you got any running to report, or that's your update for the week? Did you do any? You done a bit of jogging, didn't you? On Strava?
Oh, I did a bit of jogging. Yeah, look, I ran 6K with Jose and Al. I ran 6K with Jose and Ali. And then that was on Monday. On 7K, I jogged again, which was okay. I actually had a pretty good start to the week. Then Wednesday, it did. That's when it got a little worse. So I ran with. Actually, it was pretty funny seeing Bree was there, Ali and Jose, and we all went out for a run together, and it was pretty weird kind of group. And then it started getting worse again. So I ran again Thursday. I ran every day, really. I didn't run Sunday. Saturday, I helped out Ali on her 3x5K. So I ran the first 5K and then a float and then 2K. And that was two laps. And that's when I sort of pulled the pin, just didn't want to make it too bad. And then on the Sunday, decided I'll have a day off. So I went for a swim. So, look, I mean, what is that, 50K or something? Not great, but at least it got me out there a few times.
Mm. All right, should I recap my week? I don't want to talk about running now after you've just said how much you're missing stuff.
Tell us about your awesome workouts, Brady.
Yeah, one of them was okay. The other one wasn't too good. I kicked off the week running on Monday morning, really fresh down here. Feels like -2 Monday morning, 13.5K at a 4:35 pace, 7K in the afternoon at 4:27s. Tuesday we did monofartlek. I haven't done monofartlek for... it'd have to be at least 12, maybe 15 months. Archie had never done it in his life, so I thought we'd chuck this in the program, have a bit of a go at it. People who don't know monofartlek, it's 2x90 seconds, 4x60 seconds, 4x30 seconds, 4x15 seconds, with the same recovery. So you get 20 minutes in total. And the real emphasis, I suppose, with this workout is kind of doing the efforts flat out, but keeping it pretty honest in the floats as well. So kind of keeping the foot down. And it just, it's cooked me many a times. It's hard to get right. We did it out and back, so 10 minutes out, turn around, and then try to get back to the start line, which I think is a good way to do it, so you're just a bit more settled early. Archie dropped me with probably a minute and a half, 2 minutes to go in those 15 seconds at the end. Like, that last 2 minutes is just pretty crazy, because like 15 seconds go so fast for the efforts and the recovery. And it just, it's hard to kind of change gears and kind of keep it honest at the same time. I explain it like it feels like I'm in a washing machine, just like bouncing around all kind of different paces. Hit a 6.6K, which was a 3:02 average for the 20 minutes. I think probably the longest distance I've covered for that one. We're kind of hovering around 2:50 pace for the ons and about 3:15 for the floats. Not that we really looked at the watch probably after the 90 seconds, just because it's so... just such a short period of time and not sure what the GPS is doing. And you just concentrate on running hard and keeping it even. So that was good. I really enjoyed that workout.
That is pretty fast for that.
Yeah, it was a good one. And like, we're talking at, I don't know, I probably started at 7:05 in the morning and it was cold. And I think that was good. I was glad we did a good one, because I feel like we're pretty fit. And I feel like, as you were saying before, Croak's those hills, like that cross country races we've been doing, it's that strength, not that we've done a lot of them, but two of them, getting on the flat and doing some faster stuff feels good. So that was good, positive experience. Easy jog in the afternoon at 4:41 pace, 90 minutes Wednesday morning. My Wednesdays at the moment, I just run out a dirt road for 45 minutes and turn around, listen to Road to Nowhere every week. So it was like just over 20k at 4:21 pace. Really enjoyed the guest that Ali organised for Nick Earl last week, Moose. I think you had a bit to do with that as well. So good thinking there. I won't give it away because it was a bit of a secret. I was just pissing myself laughing as I'm running through the bush by myself. 7K in the afternoon at 4:40s. Thursday, 50 minutes in the morning, 4:28 pace. Listen to the Inside Jogging Podcast, boys. The UK fellas over there, whose name conveniently sounds pretty similar to the Inside Running Podcast and their format and stuff. So good on them for starting that up. Good to hear some one-liners from Matthew Clowes in there. He's always good on the microphone, the other two boys as well. So enjoyed learning a bit more about the UK running scene. 9K in the afternoon at 4:22s. And then our second workout for the week was yo-yo 5 minutes. So we did 5 minutes at 3:20 and then 5 minutes at 3:10. Times five, so it was 50 minutes in total. We'd had a lot of rain. Like, when I woke up at 5:30, it was raining pretty heavily, and didn't think much of it. I took the New Balance RC Elite 2s. I don't think I'd used them in the wet yet, and I just found they were perfect at 3:20 pace, like landing on my heel, but when I had to get up on my toes, I just felt I was slipping a bit, and it just made me a bit inefficient, felt like I had to kind of work super hard. And then you guys know when you're not covering the ground well, all of a sudden the effort level just feels so much harder. And like my heart rate data was pretty high considering the paces I was trying to run. Archie kind of dropped me probably 35 minutes in. So we spent the last 15 minutes, you know, following each other down the road. Oh, I kind of hit the times I wanted to, but just didn't feel like I was covering the ground like I should have been. Bad shoe choice. I think, yeah, in the future. You know how it's different on the toes there, Moose? They got different plastic on the toes they do on the
heel. They got rid of the Dyna ride or whatever it's called underneath. But it's funny you say that, because when you toe off and you lose momentum, you have to bring your – you have to use, like, your hamstring, I guess, to pull your leg up more.
Yeah, so I felt I seriously considered, I'm like, I think I've got to pull out of this workout because this could get a bit risky, and I could feel my right hamstring. And I'm like, I don't want to get, like, injured down doing this. And I just said, nah, just you land on your heels and just slow the pace down, let Archie kind of go. Yeah, but then I was kind of thinking, I was like, well, as I was doing the workout, I wasn't looking at my heart rate data. And I was thinking, well, my heart rate data might be pretty good here because I haven't been able to pick up the pace. But then when I checked it, I'm like, oh, my heart rate data was pretty high. But then I think because I just wasn't efficient on the road, just wasn't covering it. But I still, like, run a marathon pace in that shoe on a wet day, I still don't think you'd have any issues. But if it was a wet half marathon or 10K and you wanted to hit those faster paces, it wouldn't be a shoe I'd be wearing.
Ali commented on she felt him a little slippy on a couple of roads, one of the roads up here and then also the road before we left with a bit of moss on it.
Yep.
As soon as it got a bit wet, just felt him slide a little.
Well, you were the first person I messaged afterwards just checking if Ali had that similar experience. That was good to hear. Yeah, same thing. 7K in the afternoon at 4:26. This was the day the marathon team got named. I was like super inspired and super looking forward to watching them all race. I just feel like we know all those six people so well. I was just buzzing. Kind of got home from work and was telling Carly about it. And this whole run, I was just buzzing. And then Brad Croker's taking the piss out of me on my Strava comments just because I was just celebrating the Australian team getting selected and just trying to cut me down there. But that's good fun. Saturday, 13.5K easy. That was 3 degrees, a bit cold, 4:31. So after that big session on the Friday, and then cut down the Sunday long run to 1:45. We did 26K out at Barmer. The Barmer group's back together. We averaged 4:05 pace. Good loop, a bit shorter because hopefully this weekend I'm racing the Launceston 10K down in Tasmania. That was 161K for the week. The latest thing is, so at the moment, because my flight's all good from Melbourne, according to a travel agent friend. She said they'll still fly in and out of Melbourne, but instead of doing it like 4 or 5 times a day, they'll just cancel every flight and just do it once a day. And then the thing I'm trying to sort out at the moment is Tasmania's not letting in anyone from Victoria, or is a resident of Victoria. So I'm a resident of New South Wales. But they're also not letting people in who have been in Victoria the last 2 weeks. And that's actually interesting because Queensland are doing the same. So this is for people who are looking ahead to Gold Coast Marathon in 4 weeks' time. You need to be thinking 2 weeks out. So I obviously, my work's in Victoria. So it's only about 800 metres over the border into Victoria. But I can't honestly tick the box saying that I haven't been in Victoria for the last 2 weeks. But the New South Wales government's put us in a border region bubble now, and they're classifying the border region different to actually Victoria. So I filled out a form yesterday afternoon, just asking or applying for to still have a pass into Tasmania because I'm in the New South Wales border region. So looking forward to, seeing if they say yay or nay. So that would give
me the fact that you're flying out from Melbourne, aren't you?
Yeah, so the airports are, they call them neutral territories or something like that. And if you sign the form to say that you haven't stopped anywhere other than the service station on the way, you're all good. Because that was my first concern. I'm like, oh, we've got to fly out of Melbourne. But they're like, nah, it's all, if you can get to the airport and sign off on it, that's all good. So, because that was I thought the big concern was I'd have to get to another airport. But now the big concern is that Tassie aren't letting you in. So, so it'll be interesting to see what they say in the next couple of days. Still got a bit of hope there.
It's been a bit interesting too, like, because Ali's going to be coming down from Queensland. She has flights out of Melbourne.
Yeah, I know the Adelaide people do too.
Yeah, and you've got to,
I guess the concern for her was that, say, one case travels through Melbourne airport, does that become a hotspot that will see you not be allowed into other states if you've visited a hotspot in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, that's...
So like, I could be on the same flight as her, because even when I looked at when I was half thinking about driving to Adelaide and flying from Adelaide to Launceston, that they stop at Melbourne, and that was the same flight I was booked on anyway.
Yeah.
Is Ellie thinking of not going just in case? Like,
no, she's thinking of flying direct from Queensland.
Okay.
Changing flights that.
Can you go? Yeah, I know there were some people as well thinking of maybe just going direct, because I don't think direct to Launceston was an option from the other states, but they can go direct Hobart and then hire a car up to Launceston and stuff.
Yeah, you can go direct. You can go from there, Brisbane, Lonnie, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Or Sydney, Lonnie. So you can get there, just going to have to do a stopover somewhere, transfer.
But you think there should be no one in that Melbourne airport, because they're in lockdown. Isn't it just everyone in transit?
I don't know. This is new territory. I don't really know.
And anyone from New South Wales who's driving down to use it. So we're planning. I'll probably still do something even if I can't. Because I think it was good. I still want to have a down week and a bit of a sharper week this week just to prepare like something's happening on the weekend. But not sure if it's a Launceston 10K. Don't really want to do too many time trials because I felt like this is the thing. 12 months ago, to the day yesterday, we did that Bendigo 10K time trial. Remember when we all ran good times, like 29.30s? And you're like, fuck, we're 12 months on, and I'm still sitting here trying to plan a potential time trial for all these people who can't race. It's just bloody unbelievable. Anyway, that's just what we'll keep doing. So, it was a good week training. Looking forward to racing. Because, Croak, you've been saying I'm in like 28.50 shape, haven't you? So I'm looking forward to getting to one of these races to prove it. So it's going to be a shame if I can't get down there and do it.
I think that was you saying that actually on a message board.
I'm in 28.50 shape if I can't get to the race.
Brady's actually hoping it doesn't go ahead so he can just say that he's in 28.50 shape and put it on his Instagram. And
you on message boards, Brady?
It wasn't a message board, Brad. It was a Facebook message group.
Message board sounds way better.
Yeah, I was just on Let's Run, start my own thread. Do you believe Brady travels in 28.55 shape? Let's thank some Patreon supporters, fellas. Kick us off, Croaks.
All right, I've got Andrew Barge this week. Andrew lives in Sydney. According to Strava, some of his PB, 16.45 for 3K, 23.26 for 5K, and 53.38 for 10K. That's all the information we have on Andrew, but thank you for your support. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, Andrew is a bit locked down on his social media. Thank you, Andrew, for your support, though, legend. Moose, who you got?
I have Boof, also known as Jamie Hamilton. He's from Pakenham, Victoria, I believe. 1959, 5K, well done. Snuck under. 44.24.10, 3.35 marathon at Melbourne 2019, when he ran 20 minutes quicker than the year before. Visited New Zealand in March 2020. Recent over there. Recent purchaser of the New Balance RC Elite 2. That's a good purchase because I actually really like that shoe. I'm just seeing if he got it from me or not.
Yeah, he had 3 photos on his Strava of the one shoe.
Yeah, I don't think he did.
Boof, no. You'd want Boof to be a customer of yours because when I checked his Strava, and like, you know how people have photos on there, like 70% of them are just different super shoes he's been purchasing.
Boof, nah, I can't see Boof on my file. Not from the last few months anyway. Oh, Boof.
He's probably supporting a local running company down Melbourne there. Pakenham, that's pretty close to Melbourne, isn't it?
Oh, is that like Lilydale? Maybe he goes in Lilydale.
Isn't Pakenham like, and I'm pretty sure I drove past that the other day on the way to Warrigal. Isn't it that side?
Yeah, that's where Lilydale is.
Oh, there's a Lilydale down there, is it?
Yeah.
Right. Julia Alexander. Thanks, Boof. I'm going to thank Julia Alexander from Ascot in Queensland. I found a 147 at the Gold Coast Half Marathon in 2019, a 406 at the Gold Coast Marathon in 2018. Really consistent trainer, consistent blue bars on her Strava profile. Maybe a bit of a history in triathlon. Maybe owns a boat or/yacht. I saw a lot of photos of her, like on the water up there in Brisbane. or Ascot. Yeah, I think that's Brisbane. So, you know, must be pretty loaded if she's getting around in a yacht. Maybe has three kids, two boys and a girl, with an estimated age of 10, 8 and 5. Has been to Canada when it was snowing. So thanks, Julia, for your support. All the other legends over there on Patreon, keeping the show alive every week. Got some bonus content for you, early releases, all those bonus Road 2 episodes. It's a good place to be if you want to support the show. Keep us alive. Runner news, fellas. There's a lot of it this week. Do you want to start with the women's 10,000 metre record over in the Netherlands overnight? Moosh, you watched it. Safaan Hassan absolutely destroyed it.
She did. She was a different level athlete, really, to anything we've ever seen before, considering she's run the world record. So it was at Hengelo in the Netherlands. I didn't really realize she was running until I turned the stream on. I was there to watch the Aussies, really. I was there to watch Izzy, Jen, and Rose Davies. But then we saw Safaan on the start line, and I thought, oh, wow, she's going for the world record. And the pace, so the race went off. It was a bit of a mess at the start because there was three pacing groups, I believe. There was her group, Safaan's, then there was another group behind, and then there was the Olympic qualifying group, which I think were going for 31:10 for their pacing. And that was the group the Australians and Camille was in, that Andrea Sakafian was pacing. But it took a while for it to all work itself out with so many athletes there, and they're all in their different groups. So it was a bit of a mess early. Safaan jumped in behind the pacer, went through 2:56, 5:52, I think. And she did pretty well, a lady by the name of, was it Van Ness? Van Ness maybe. And then she pulled out, and then all of a sudden the next pacer couldn't keep the pace up, and Safaan was trying to get around, and she was making she was throwing her hands up in the air because the pacer wouldn't really let her around. And then Safaan snuck through on the inside, and the pacer obviously was getting paid to a certain point, so she put in a big surge and went back around again. It was pretty farcical. And then in the end, Safaan just sort of threw her hands up and sprinted past, and she was in front of the world record the whole time by a few steps, and she did it pretty much without any discomfort whatsoever by the looks, because she kicked it down. Last K was 2:46 or something.
That's
what
I read. Yeah.
2:46,
last K of 10K. Let that sink in.
Mate, that's off 20. That's off 29. 17 pace, wasn't it?
Exactly. So, yeah. Because she was right. I only watched the last four laps, but the commentators were saying she's 1 second ahead, she's half a second behind, she's half a second in front. She was really on that record, just on that line, next to the pacing lights.
Halfway perfect. So she destroyed it. She finished. She jogged off, and I thought you were supposed to be a little in deficit. Oxygen deficit, maybe, if you want to run a world record by so much, that would take.
Have we said the time? 29:06.
29:06. She ran, so superhuman effort at the end, and it didn't really look like she was in any discomfort. So that's a sign of a freak performance. The girls, the Australian girls, had a bit of a rough one. So I think I haven't got splits of theirs, but it looked. They were in the group with Andrea pacing, and through 3K, I think they were okay. And then I saw Camille and Izzy had dropped off, and then Rose had dropped off, and then Jen had dropped off. So that was off the 31:10 pace. That pace ended up getting the qualifier, that group did, which was 31:25 was the qualifying time. But those girls couldn't hang on, and... in the end, there was a bit of a kerfuffle at the end. I was watching, I saw Jen go through. The clock at the time said 30:39, I think, when she went through with one lap to go. And then the camera zoomed away, and I thought, okay, trying to do the math in my head, I'm like, she'll probably run a faster lap and run 31:54, maybe? 31:54, 31:53.
and then Rose, and I just thought everyone else would just sort of filter behind her in around the same sort of time gaps as they were before. But then they put the results up later, and I was like, oh, wow, she really had a bad last lap, Jen, if she's run that time. But it turned out that they'd miscounted the laps and they'd stopped at the end, because as I was watching Jen finish, there was a pack of Kenyans that were racing for second place came through. So there was, I think, three of them. Maybe there was an Ethiopian, sorry. But the three Africans came through, passed, lapped Jen and finished. And they finished probably 2 seconds in front of Jen. And I just assumed Jen kept running because she got lapped by them. But she must have assumed that they'd come from behind her and were out kicking her. And so she had stopped. And perhaps the other Australian girl saw that Jen had stopped and assumed that it was the end. And so they also stopped. And then they, I think Camille told them that they had a lap to go, so they got up and ran around again. But the times probably aren't reflective of what they were actually on pace for at the end. So, yeah, none of them were even close to getting the qualifier, though. It wasn't sort of a matter of a few seconds would have got them. Maybe Jen would have got a PB. The other girls wouldn't have. So I don't think it's a disaster what happened, really, considering that the consequences were pretty low. I also want to just make a comment on that. Like, a few people have said, oh, this is a farcical race because they didn't change the lap counter to the athletes who were going through late in the race who had been lapped. Like, these girls were lapped twice by Sifan. I've done a lot of 10Ks and I often finish well down in the field. And the lap counter always goes off the lead runner. And if you're getting lapped, you kind of have to make your own adjustments to that. I can't remember a race where I was getting lapped, and I've been lapped multiple times in some 10Ks, where they adjust it for me and then put it back for the lead runner. Have you guys ever done a race?
No, so they always have it for the lead runner, but often there's somebody there shouting out to the lap runners saying, you know, say there's two on the counter and you've been lapped, they'll say, you know, you've got three. Like, there's often somebody calling that out, but
sometimes they've got a plastic.
Yeah, there's a person calling it out for the, you know, to the lap runners. Like, because there's obviously, they normally have a lap counter for each runner, so there's somebody keeping track of how many laps people have run.
Yeah, but that's not the person yelling stuff out, though. They're sitting in seats like 20 or 30 meters away. Yeah. But then I know it's Zatopek, because this happened to me where Stewie nearly lapped me twice when he broke the Australian record. They sometimes have like a plastic pocket folder as well. So you got to start ignoring the other one. And then they show that up when your group's kind of going through. But it's still, like, that was an example I used today when I was talking to someone about this. Like, this happens in pretty much every track 10K race, that people get lapped and you have to start managing your own laps. And I haven't really come across an incident before where three of them get it wrong in the one race. Mm. And maybe, you know, Rose and Izzy's decision-making was impacted because they just thought they were 100 metres behind Jen the whole time. And then when she stopped, they thought, oh, well, we're done as well. But, like, there was only 13 finishers in the field. You'd assume you know who's lapped you and who hasn't. Like, it wasn't a massive field. But they can get confusing.
You do have brain fuzz at the end of those races. Mm. You get pretty deficit of oxygen. But for me, like, if you were on a 31 end pack and you got dropped about halfway or just over, then chances are you probably haven't run, like, an Australian record. You, like, if you saw the time and go, oh, wow, I've got dropped by the pack that was on 31.10 pace and I've run 30 seconds faster than that, like, that's probably not a thing. Like, that would happen. There must have been mass confusion at the end.
Well, then the confusing thing was that they put Rose Davies in the results as fourth in 30.54. So anyone who woke up this morning and checked those results thought, oh, Rose just ran the second fastest. But that would be a 24 lap time when she stopped.
That's right. And that's what I'm guessing anyway. Yeah. Cause the camp
was... I thought she had, because that's what I saw.
Did you?
The first thing I saw was Izzy Strava. And I'm like, oh, it's a debacle for, like, her in terms of, you know, they got the laps wrong and all this. But there was no mention of Rose in that. And then I checked the results and she's there at 30.54. I was just like, oh wow, she's had a cracker. And then it's actually on her World Athletics. So that's her PB on World Athletics now. Yep.
Jeez, I'd be keeping quiet, Rose. I wouldn't be saying anything about
the Olympics,
that. You're going to the Olympics in 5 and the 10K.
Yes, they haven't changed it. They haven't fixed it up.
Benita's on notice.
I'd sneak through.
Yeah.
The best thing Rose did was actually not get up and finish that last lap.
Yeah, so we explained that. Then Jen and Izzy then got up and finished their last lap, obviously after being stopped for a while. And imagine the emotions you got going through you after that's mm-hmm. happened. And then Rose didn't finish that last lap, so they've taken her time. Can you remember when Lopez Lamont did it?
Yeah.
In the 5K, he just started putting in a surge with 2 laps to go, thinking it was the last lap, and then the crowd really stops and starts celebrating.
Didn't he still run super quick?
Yeah, I think he ran like 13:18 or something, 13:15, and the crowd just all pointing to him like he's celebrating, and they're just like, keep running, mate. And then he's just fully gassed, but just still gets around the last lap.
Disappointing for the girls, though, because I really thought based on their 5K that they were a really good shot of getting it, and especially given that, you know, Izzy ran like, what, 31:40 in training as a fartlek just before she left. So I'm sure they're super disappointed. And the only positive is that they've all got a qualifier in the five, or Izzy and Rose. So hopefully that's enough to get in.
Yeah, hopefully. See what happens. Not long to go now. What, 3 weeks until it closes? Do you want to go to Sydney next? Oh, we should actually say Katrina Bissett was there as well in the women's 800. She finished fifth in 201.8. So we'll jump around a bit here, Croaks. We'll go to Sydney next. You guys had your round of cross-country relays up there, 4x4K. You didn't throw on a single. Didn't get tempted to go up there and help your team out?
No, I wasn't that tempted.
Your team struggled too, didn't they? Didn't even go top three.
Yeah, it's must be a rebuilding phase for Sydney Uni at the moment. Like at full strength, they're not bad. Like, you know, like Nipper's obviously overseas at the moment. You got Hugh Williams and Joe Burgess. So, like, you know, still got some good runners, but they obviously just weren't available for this weekend. So, anyway, Run Crew won the men's in 48:06. So each runner had to do 2 laps of a 2K course, and it was pretty relatively hilly, I believe. I haven't run there before. It's a new course. Run Crew won 48:06, Bankstown second, 49:26, and UTS third in 49:45. Benny Saint had the quickest run leg of the day in 11:51. So,
bit of strength there from Benny Saint. So you got Gold Coast Marathon coming up.
Yeah. So it goes to show that the marathon training doesn't necessarily impact your speed over the shorter stuff, given that he beat guys like
Kieran Tall, Tom DeCano. Josh Johnson would have been in there from Bankstown.
Yep. So, and then in the women's, Run Crew won again, 59:59. Sydney University was second in 101:26, and Ramwick Botton in third in 101:59. Fastest runner there for the day was Emily Ryan in 13:49.
Got some good numbers too. I was slagging them off not so long ago, Athletics New South Wales, for not having numbers that Athletics Victoria have. But I think they had something like 700 athletes run around for the day. So that's positive. Still just division there though, isn't it? Everyone runs in the one division.
Obviously, you have different age categories and things like that. But for the opens, you have like a Run Crew, for example, would have their Run Crew team, Run Crew B, Run Crew C. But they all compete against each other.
169 teams, 766 athletes. That's doing good stuff. 4 people in your team makes a bit of a difference, though, compared to 6 in Victoria. Finding those extra 2 people can really expose a team a bit.
Yeah, we've never had 6 to score in New South Wales for events.
6 is hard.
It is hard.
Especially if someone can't make it or someone's doing a marathon or something. Let's talk about Jeff Risley next, the 34-year-old. Did you see this result?
Yeah, I did, and it's amazing, but it doesn't surprise me. Like, anybody that's seen this guy run knows how good he is. Like, how much would you pay Brady to be able to move the way that he does? Oh. Like, it's just so smooth.
So much smooth. And did you watch the video? There's a video getting around. Hopefully Ross can find it, put in the show notes if listeners want to see it. But I think it's of like the last 300. Like, they are flying, and Jeff's a bit off him. And he's just so smart the way he pulls them in and just times it perfectly. He ran 145.34. So what this means, he was just 0.14 of a second outside the Olympic qualifier to win this race. He did in Italy, first race off the plane over there in Europe, his best time for 5 years. This will be his fourth Olympics if he can qualify. His I think he's sitting in about, I looked up this, so he hasn't got the time, but in the rankings he's there now. I think Charlie Hunter was 40th. Jeff, they hadn't updated it to have Jeff in there yet, but Jeff's run quicker, so he's going to be in front of it, in front of Charlie Hunter, and they take 48. So cool to see his name still there. And Peter Boll, who has been so close to clocking that Olympic qualifier all Australian domestic season, he went out and got it at the Gold Coast. I think this Oceania Invitation Series event was. He ran at 144.84. So this time last week, we didn't have any 800 boys with the time. He's got it now, and it's looking like Jeff is very, very close to getting it as well. So good things for the 800-meter men's stocks.
And you'd imagine Jeff will have probably another three opportunities over there or so, maybe even more. 800s tend to back up pretty quickly. But like at 34, you know, like if we talk about distance running being a sport where you can run well into your, you know, your later age, but like 34 is getting on for 800. So it's bloody impressive.
Remember when we talked to him after Zatopek, when we were doing that kind of live show, this watch party? And remember he said how he was just really focused on this 800, and and he, you know, he wasn't doing anything special throughout our season, but he's getting it right at the right time. You want to take us over to the US, the Portland. Was this the Portland Twilight Stump Series, I think it was?
Yeah, Stumptown? Stumptown, I think it was. So we had a one qualifier. So Amy Cashin in the women's steeplechase ran 9:28. So she joins Jen Gregson as the two that have qualified for this event. Paige Campbell and Georgia Wincup haven't got the time yet, but they're in the top 45 rankings with 29th and 34th respectively. Obviously they can only take three, and so Jen's a certainty, and you'd have to imagine Amy is pretty much locked in now that she's got the time, unless Paige or Georgia can run faster.
Now, Croaks, so, with that, and Moose, you might know some more about that as well, because there was a steeple, I did these notes before it happened, up at that Gold Coast Twilight meet I'm talking about. The lady who was second at Nationals to Jen Gregson, the young girl, Cara, let me find her name.
Fane Ryan.
Yeah. So she
won the race.
She won the race. Do you know where that's put her in this situation?
I don't think she had a significant impact on the time. So perhaps she ran, I think it was 9:44 perhaps.
Yeah, but on point, she's now sitting 47th.
Okay, right, wow.
So you've got Paige at 29th, Georgia at 34th. So we've got four, what do they take? The top 45. So, yeah, she's going to really have to jump up to 34th, though, because we're not going to be able to take that many. She's going to have to jump up to 29th.
That's one of the only events with these roll-downs, isn't it? Like this big, deep roll-down for you to not have the time but still go to the Olympics. It's steeplechase. It's both the steeplechase events, because it's the same in the men's. So if you're an up-and-coming 5K runner and you don't mind jumping over things, and you want an Olympic spot, that's probably the best way to go for it at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it's easier said than done, though, that transition, though, isn't it?
It is. It's easier.
Stewie tried that at one point.
Yeah, but Stewie doesn't need to do it anymore.
No, he doesn't now, but he did give it a crack at one point.
There is skill to steeplechase. I'm not saying there's not. I'm just saying that, like, in terms of the qualifying time, obviously you can go without achieving it. You can't really do that in many other events, if any other events in the distance world.
Pat Tiernan, did you say that as well, Crooks? Pat Tiernan, 5K, 13:20. 157 yeah, so last 800. Eric Jenkins got him again, though. He likes our kicking, Pat Jenkins.
Didn't it slow at one point during the race, though?
Yeah, I was watching the splits. Yeah, they were, but then they dropped a couple of, like, 67s in there, which is, like, 14 dead pace, and then Pat went to the front and really wound it up, and those two got away from the field there, so they were two out in front. So it's good to see Pat Tiernan in that. That'd be only, I reckon, he's ran, what, 13-12, 13-13. I reckon it's pretty close to his PB when you start looking at things. So he's in shape as well. Other bit of international news before we talk about our Australian marathon team was this European Cup. I watched this on Sunday morning. It was on a good time if you're getting ready for your Sunday long run. Women's race was amazing. Elise McColgan, she got the win in 31:19, 64-second last lap. She caught Israel's Sala Malouet Terefi, 31:19 as well, 0.5. And then third was Jessica Judd. If you're following Great Britain's 800-meter running a couple of years ago, you would maybe remember that name. She's been around for a while, but she started as a junior, and she's come through. She ran 31:20 as well. So she's...
What was her PB before that?
Before this, let me look that up. Do you want to read out the men's results?
Yeah. So in the men's results, like, the male winner was from France, Morhad Amdouni. He ran 27:23 for a PB and Olympic qualifier. Bashir Abdi from Belgium was second in 27:24. Is this Abdi the one who trains with Mo Farah?
No, that's Abdi Abdurrahman, isn't it?
No, there's another Abdi as well that trains with Mo. Oh, okay. Not the, what do they call him? The cactus? The black cactus. Black cactus. Not him. Third was Carlos Mayo from Spain, 27:25 PB. The Mark Scott was the first British athlete home in 27:49, and he outkicked Mo Farah. So Mo Farah needed the time and did not get it, and did not get it by quite a ways as well. So it was like 22 seconds or something that Mo missed it by, or 20 seconds, and he's not sliding back into the top of world athletics like he maybe thought he was going to.
Yeah, and like, he was there when they picked it up, he just couldn't respond.
That's just, you just don't remember that from Mo Farah, do you?
Like, he was getting dropped 6 or 7 laps in, kind of thing. And then Mark Scott, because he already had the time, and I think he had to go top two Brits, he was automatic selection. So he's going to the Olympics. Mo Farah's not at this stage because he's got till the end of June to try and find the time. Days are running out for Mo. But yeah, definitely didn't look like the old Mo.
Yeah. Look, the old Mo was invincible. He could win races from the front, from the back, taking a drink in a track race. He could fall over and get up and do everything. Win 1500s, he'd win half marathons. He was the runner of my era, I guess, starting running and then following it for the last 10 years. He has been the runner. So I didn't see the Bikili days
Gebrselassie days.
Gebrselassie, yeah. or even the, what's the Moroccan's name again?
Al Gharouj.
Hisham Al Gharouj.
You missed Hisham.
I missed all those guys.
That was just when I was starting.
Yeah, it was Mo Farah for me.
So you would have kind of missed Mottram a bit then.
Yeah, I did miss Mottram. Yeah. I started running in like 2010, pretty much. 2009, maybe. So Mottram was just around there. I still love watching him try to keep going, but just never really sort of could get back where he was.
Croaks has probably been like back in John Landy days, you would have been watching when you Croaks.
Settle down. It's funny you talk about these different eras, though, and this goes to show like how good Kipchoge is, because you're talking about all these eras, and he was racing El Gharouj at the World Championships in 2003, and he's still at the top of his game. Like, that's incredible.
Jessica Judd, a debut track 10K, 31:20. She's ran 32:17 on the road. But her, like, I look at her actual PBs here. She's got some range, like 159 for 8, 403 for 1500. 15.06 for 5K. And I think she's just, the longer she's gone, she's more she's progressed. She was the one really outspoken about, was it releasing the blood data from the testing, like the doping tests from back in the day? I don't know.
The Paula Radcliffe data.
I don't know if it was Paula Radcliffe's data or somebody's. I'd want to get this name right just so I don't stuff it up. She was good. But Moose, tell us about this Australian Olympic team. Why I'm maybe looking at this up. Oh no, it was Mo Farah's data she wanted. Jessica Judd savages UKAD over reluctance to release Mo Farah's old samples. British runner warns athletics.
Probably not interested in that data anymore.
British runner warns athletics is dying. Drug-fueled death. UKA will not hand over samples without credible evidence. So, we'll put this link in the show notes as well. This is from about a year ago from The Guardian, just to make sure I wasn't making that up. But the big Australian news was that on Friday, the Australian Marathon Olympic team got announced. Men's team Liam Adams will line up for his second Olympics, Brett Robinson his second Olympics, Jack Rayner at his first Olympics for the men, and then in the women's, Sinead Diver and Ali Pashley will make their Olympic debut, whereas Lisa Waitman will match the record of three all-time greats, Australian long distance runners Lisa Ondiecki, Steve Monteghetti and Robert De Castella when she lines up for her fourth Olympic marathon at the Tokyo Games. What was it like at your end, Moose, here in the news? Obviously, we kind of all knew it was coming, but what was it actually like on the day?
So we didn't know it was coming. We didn't know it. Ali, so it was the funny story was that Ali and I had an argument about her training during the day, sort of the day before, and I was like, it was just a little awkward at the time, and then
big argument. Stop talking to each other.
Not a big argument. We just had like a disagreement on something that we think that just one aspect of it. And this is, it's healthy, right? She's a pretty smart athlete. She's a coach herself, and we're close friends. So it's good to have discussions like this. And she's pretty firm in her thoughts, and I was firm in my thoughts, and we just had like a little disagreement. And then she came to the gym. I was already at the gym, and she just was like, I think Bree said like, oh, we have to go get a bottle of champagne. And I said, oh, what? I'm like, I looked at Ali. I'm like, are you pregnant? What's happening here? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh shit, the team. Oh, this is, and then, so yeah, I could just tell at the time, like, for me, because I'm a bit of an outsider to it all, it was just as if it was a lock anyway. So I didn't really see the significance in it, and I didn't appreciate that there was an actual weight hanging over the shoulders of those that weren't actually locked on the team yet until it happened. And then I could just tell there was like this relief, like from Ali's perspective, that yes, it is happening. It's named. I don't have to worry about that anymore. I probably was a little underestimated the significance of it, because it was a pretty fun kind of time to celebrate.
Yeah, we're setting a strong team. It's going to be exciting. There's some ballers in that team. I did love enjoying the Sinead Diver article yesterday, the 2-page spread in the Herald Sun. That was good to see, even though they spelled her name wrong as Sinead Driver, which is a bit of a stuff up. I don't know how people make those kind of mistakes. But, it was good to see a bit of publicity getting around. Lisa, obviously, the four-time with those greats now, is good to see her name were there.
And geez, that's big.
That's huge, isn't it?
You got to pay credit to that. The four Olympics consist, especially knowing that she's had, like, some ridiculous amount of stress fractures as well when she was a younger athlete.
Yeah,
a child to be able there. To progress through that. And imagine going through all those injuries and then still sort of being resilient enough to keep going and nail four marathons that put you on the plane to the Olympics.
It's consecutive too, isn't it? That this article didn't say. Yeah. But she went, yeah.
It would have been Beijing, London, Rio, and this one.
Yeah, yeah.
So she would have qualified in like 2007, I'm guessing, like for the first for Beijing.
Shit, it was like 13 years ago, isn't it? 14 years ago.
14, yeah. So it's pretty impressive.
To be the top three in your country for a 14-year span.
And
not many people do that in any other sports.
Nah, rowing's one they can do it in, isn't it? That they seem to be pretty, like, they can sort of buffer the age a little bit. And, like, Sinead hates us talking about it, but, fuck, it's a real thing. She's 44 years old, right? That's, I know, like, it triggers her, but you have to, like, say that's an amazing effort as well. Both those ladies work, have families, kids, so... Oh, there's a lot of excuses people are finding, and those two ladies aren't finding or looking for them.
But the thing is, they're so strong. Like, you look at some people could look at our marathon team, their age, and go, oh, Australia's not sending their strongest team, but these girls are going to, like, absolutely smoke people up.
Strongest team nearly of all time, really. When you consider
it was, wasn't it? Didn't they say in that article it's the strongest ever marathon female team we've sent?
Well, just look at the times. You've got sort of like... maybe the fourth, sixth, and fifth fastest or something
like
that.
Yeah, that was the stat that I read, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's... And you've got them coming up, like all of... So although Sinead and Ali ran their last marathon at a poor London race conditions-wise, it's relatively... Oh, I guess it's 18 months now. It's got sort of a little longer, but they're still running well on the track and they're still fighting for wins in... great competition in 10Ks, like at bridge to bridge. Lisa ran that 10K in 31:50 or something at 31 something at Sandy Point, 10K there. Yep. So, yeah, everyone's fit.
They're fit. It's going to be exciting to watch their progression. Looking forward to hearing Ali with the boys tomorrow night, see how much attention they give her about that. Listener question, Croaks.
Yep. Hey, legends. Sorry if this has been covered before, but how often are you guys taking a total break? So that's at least a week from running following a major event. No cross training, just rest. Do you think there is benefit there? Or do you like keep rolling easy? Coming off UTA and can't keep going at all, keep up the good work, team.
Didn't I put his name there, Brendan?
No name there.
Sorry, Brendan. I'm pretty sure it's Brendan. I did have that. I was just doing it before we started. Must have.
That's okay. Good question.
You want to answer first, Moose? What do you usually do after a major race?
Oh, if it's a major race that I've had a great build up for, I might take 2 weeks off running totally. I think it is an important part of the year for a runner is to take rest at a certain period of time. I think it allows you to come back a lot stronger. I think mentally it allows you to relax a little, refocus on your goals, determine what you want to do with your running. It allows your body to fully recover and recuperate without loading it and pounding it anymore. You can get some weight back up that you probably lost during the previous 10 to 12 weeks of marathon training, if that's what you did. And I think it's part of like the philosophy that I have as a coach is that you need to have high, like, solid rest periods and down periods in order to go higher with your next peak period. I don't think you can continue along in this sort of plateaued state where you all of a sudden going to get a sharp rise. I think you need to take the rest in order to build bigger bases and come back stronger. So there's value in rest and so many people finish a marathon, if it goes to plan and goes great, they're super antsy to get going again because they can see more PBs. If it goes poorly, they want to come back out and change even the ledger in their next one. But it's the period from 2 weeks post-marathon to 6 weeks post-marathon where people get injured because they come back too quick. All of a sudden, their legs feel okay, but the rest of their bodies are still trying to recover, whether it's the neural system or the just general fatigue, just beat up, and you've got to respect it.
I also think there's like you need the rest mentally as well, especially for long like events, because as you know, like in that period, sort of you know, 7 weeks to 3 weeks out from a marathon, like, you're putting in a hell of a lot of work, and like, mentally it's very hard to get up, and then race day it's very hard to get up as well. So you almost need that break mentally to recharge, because if you have a good race day, yeah, you're pumped and you want to get back into it. You might be up for like 1 or 2 weeks, but then once you get back into the grind, you're like, oh no, I'm just not up to this. Like, personally, if after my marathons, that first week, I don't do anything for at least 4 days, and then the next three are optional, in terms of if I don't want to run, I don't. If I do want to run, I do like 20 minutes max. That's pretty much my first week, and then the second week is still just jogging, probably no more than like 45 minutes. So like, I wouldn't run more than 45 minutes in the 2 weeks after a marathon, just to freshen up physically, but also mentally, because those events, when you put everything into an event, it's draining physically, but also mentally.
Yeah, I like the day for every mile rule, 26 days. And I'll do the same, Croak. So I'll have 4 or 5 days completely off, and then I'll test it out with a 20-minute jog. But then the day after that will be always off, even if it feels good in that 20-minute jog. And then the second week, same thing, will just be light jogging. And then, like, throughout, like, ideally 26 days or a month, at the end of that month, I'll just slowly build things up. So it might be like 40%, 60%, 80%. And then after that month's up, ideally ready to go again in that fifth week after the marathon at what would look like a standard, not marathon block training, but just a standard week when you're not in a marathon specific block. Yeah. Sometimes we might have people train towards a marathon, and then it's like, okay, cool, I'll call you again when I want to train for my next marathon. But then we'll just say, hey, use this for the next 4 weeks, because this is also a really risky area. If you think you're ready to come back, add another week, because smashes you. That was Blair Hurst who wrote that question, by the way. Thanks, Blair.
I think it also applies to events shorter than the marathon. And this is one thing that really sets the pros apart from like the recreational runners, is the pros have distinct periods of their season where they do actually take like full rest. And it could be 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then they slowly build, and they know that when they first come out and race at the start of the season that they're not going to be great. And so they are very good at periodizing and taking set rest periods throughout the year. So there's nothing wrong with taking, you know, two or three blocks of two down weeks throughout the year. So
I think I remember reading that David Rudisha took 8 weeks off after the Olympics. Yeah. 8 weeks of running.
But don't you agree, Moose, that like these professional track runners are they do it so well.
Look at Nick Willis. He's a good example. He has really, really long and deep layoffs, and then always comes back to championship racing and times it perfectly.
Mm.
And I think you do. Like, I don't think you can go along doing the same work week in, week out, and expect the body to make jumps or just spikes in fitness.
He's good at documenting it though as well. Like, he'll say, hey, I put on 8 kilos or whatever. Like, yeah, doesn't hide away from it.
What we should say as well though, that if you do have a break, and we do recommend taking breaks, don't expect to be where you were when you first come back. Like, that's a risk there where people just think, all right, well, I'm fresh, I'm ready to go. And then they start training and they either try and push too hard to hit the times they were before the break. That's a bit of a risk as well.
I'd nearly say it's a 2 month thing. Like, you got that month to recover and then the month to rebuild it until things are starting to click again. And it's also like a great time to do all those things in your life that you say no to when you're training for a marathon. Like, catch up with people that you don't usually see, or go to the pub, or like, that's what I like to love doing, that, just not having to prioritize running at the top in those break periods. Thanks for the question, Blair, and your Patreon support. Moose on the Loose, purchase of the week.
Another scan.
MRIs. Moose, I was watching this race the other night, last night it was, and I always, for some reason, I'm just so into the commentators, like in terms of finding every little thing that I basically just listen and wait till they say something I disagree with and then just blow up about it.
pretty much what you do, you co-host on Inside Running.
I'm looking for a fight at any given moment. And so I was watching last night, and when Hassan started to start passing people, she was coming up behind a few of them and like throwing her arms up as if, why are these people not moving off the track into lane two, and letting her just go through unimpeded. And the commentators were saying, oh, I'm sure they would move if they could hear her. It's probably just a bit loud in there. I was like, bullshit. These girls are fucking the best in our country running right now. They're going for Olympic qualifiers. They're professional athletes. They don't give a shit about how fast Safwan Hassan runs. They don't care if she gets a world record. They're there with their livelihood on the line. They don't need to get into lane two. Like, if she wants to go around, she goes around. This is her job to get around. It's not them to fucking look after her and hold her hand. They're there for themselves as individuals, and that pissed me off to sort of seem like they kind of made it out like it was almost unselfish, because they went around Rose and Rose didn't move over, and I was like, well, no, fuck, she's not good. No, or maybe Rose did move over the first time, but when she was a bit cooked the second time she didn't, and Jen didn't move over, and I think the commentator said, oh, it's just a bit loud out there, Jen probably didn't hear, and I was like, fuck that, Jen's a professional, she's not moving over. She's running the smallest, tightest line she can to the finish. It's her job.
And you look at just about every Olympic 10,000-meter final, and they're always lapping people and always having to go around them.
Yeah.
It's part of racing, chaos. Even, yeah, exactly. Even at the Olympics.
Part of racing. Yep.
Yep. Stick to the 15. So, what's her name? Safwan. Safwan, yeah. Hassan, if you don't want to be lapping people. Well, that's the thing. She could win gold at the 15 through the 10.
Oh, she could do
just
whatever.
Just depends on whichever one she wants. She ran 351, 1500.
Yeah, she
got
impressive.
Better PBs than Croaks.
Yeah.
She'd be the fastest on this show if she was on here.
Not 1500, not 351.
Didn't you run 352?
348.
She would run 348, no fucking problem. She break 4 minutes in a mile.
She's very animated, isn't she? Like, now you mention it, the arms going up, and she kind of had a little dreadlocks. So are they called dreads or braids?
Oh, she was full
like
gangster.
Swagger last night. Was there, yeah.
She was OG.
I saw Nick Earl getting fired up that they didn't take the camera off her at the finish line there. But when you're kind of entertaining like that and you've just broken the world record, you can see why they kept the camera on her. I don't agree with it. It would have been good to see everyone else come in, but she was playing up to the cameras, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt a little odd watching it. I thought it was like she didn't know what to do.
Well, it's awkward, isn't it? Like, there's all these cameras and then she doesn't know what to do. And it's like, at least she looked happy. Sometimes when people break world records, it's almost like they don't smile and just like don't look exhausted and then just walk off. And it's just
It doesn't seem to be like super camera friendly. In all the interviews and stuff she's done, so it probably is a little awkward.
Who coaches her now? Because they threw the camera, because she used to be with Salazar, of course. Like, that's probably worth noting.
Tim Mowbray or Tim something, because they didn't say his name.
Yeah, they just threw the camera. They said, oh, there's her coach, he'll be happy. And I'm like, who's this guy? I've never seen him in my life.
Oh, Tim Mowbray.
Yeah, that's his name, yeah.
Is that Shannon Mowbray's husband?
No.
Surely a relation. She was Oregon Project 2, wasn't she? No.
No, it's a different spelling. Okay. Roberry is a different spelling. I actually don't really know his background. This is the first time I've heard of him.
Well, I'm just on his Instagram now. So it's Nike track and field coach of Safwan Hassan and Yomif Kijelcha.
So he picked up Salazar's guys when Salazar got
So he's Utah Valley University alumni. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Joss Herman's her manager too. They kept throwing at him on the...
was the race, the meet organizer, obviously.
Oh, okay, and he wanted the world record.
Yeah, I think he was meet director.
Because he was just in like lane three, and they, every time he was pretty animated when she went past as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, good moves on the loose. What's coming up, fellas? Croaks, what do you got coming up in your life?
Pretty quiet one this weekend, or long weekend.
Again, you have long weekends every weekend up there.
Don't you have a long weekend?
But we
Queen's
have,
birthday.
We didn't have one 2 weeks ago, though, like
yeah,
you guys did.
Yeah, everyone gets a Queen's birthday long weekend, don't they?
Get the blokes, in May. Get the blokes up there on this vaccination program, Croaks. Get them working up there or something. Let's re-back open the country.
Should move to Canberra if you want a few extra public holidays.
Public holidays, higher pay.
There ain't much work going on in that federal government you have up there in Canberra.
Hey, Moose, it's interesting you bring up that point because I follow you on Strava and sometimes it, not Strava, on Twitter, and sometimes it gives me suggestions of people to follow. And then if they're ever politicians, it always says Julian Spence follows. And I'm like, if you just follow a whole, like, are you pretty political now you bring that up?
Oh, mate, if I didn't have a business, I would just be a full-time political commentator. If,
really?
If I didn't have a business that could be associated with my views. Yeah. I'm pretty, like, more and more lately, just I'm getting so disillusioned with just the deceit that we, as the public, are getting put through, like, from the top. Just the amount of lies, the runaround. It's just, I don't want these people representing me. That's, and if I won't go into it because I've made a point of not to sort of publicly go down this path, but I think there's some real problems in our country. Do you not feel that way with all this stuff that's going on?
Oh, mate, don't get me started on like Indigenous kind of history and rights and stuff like that in this country. Like, that's what always works me up. Like, they come out with that Uluru statement a couple of years ago and just pretty much got ignored by federal parliament.
Anyway. What about all the sexual assault allegations at the moment?
Yeah.
And the passing the buck around, no one taking responsibility. I just don't.
No one's still being charged with that.
No one's being held accountable in the media. Like, the media is in this country is just. I'm not going to go down that path. I'm going to back out now.
Okay. Back it out.
Save it for next week's Moose on the Loose.
Croaks has got a long week. Croaks has got a long weekend. Moose, what are you getting up to between now and next week?
I got another scan tomorrow, I think. And then down the track tomorrow, down at Sunshine Coast University. Ali's got some 400, so time to live through someone else for another few weeks. what else are we doing? That's it. That's it.
That's good. Live show at the Gold Coast, fellas. Only 8 tickets left. The final eight. I don't think wasn't there like 15 or 13 last week. We really didn't sell many in the last 7 days, but it's still impressive. We've only got 8 left.
Maybe save 8. See if you make any mates on the plane flight up.
Yeah, I might be driving up the rate I'm going down here. Yeah. We're not sure how I'll be getting there. Anyway, we'll see what happens. What's that? 4 weeks. Hopefully, the state of Victoria is sorted out by 4 weeks' time. We'll see what happens.
So when will you know, Brady, whether you're going to Launceston or not? Like, have you?
Yeah, when this application, I don't know actually what it's called. When this thing with the Tasmanian government gets approved or shut down, so you could only apply 7 days out, and then if your time of travel was more than 7 days, they don't accept them because it could change so quickly. So yeah, I got told if I don't hear by Wednesday, then call them.
Do they look at what you're actually going down there for? So the fact that you're going to an event where there's lots of people in a close proximity, do they take that into consideration?
That was one of the options. Like, yeah, there's a drop down box, and it's like, why do you want to be, not comes from the other avenue, I guess, of just saying like, you shouldn't be kind of coming because you've visited Victoria. So there was a whole lot, to access a funeral or if you work in defence and things like that. But the one I ticked was I just want to come without quarantining. And then I didn't have to say the reason at this stage, but I just had to kind of put evidence of why I thought I didn't have to quarantine.
You didn't write on there saying, I want to come to prove to people that I can run 28:53 for 10K?
No, I put on there, I'm a New South Wales resident. Please see attached a picture of my logo and I have it. I have my licence and evidence that I haven't left the New South Wales Victoria border bubble.
Can't you get someone at Echuca Moama Bowling Club with some political connects?
Well, I need someone in Tasmania. If there's someone in Tasmania.
Oh, mate, that bowling club would be connected, don't worry. When you've got that many pokies, the money goes high.
They've got a roulette wheel in there now, I tell you that. Archie goes there every second day, just takes money out of the place, he reckons.
What numbers he put it on?
He's got some theory that it's like you bet the... him and Glenn were talking about it on the drive back from the long run the other day. You bet the first third and the third third, and then you put money on every number in the middle third other than two, and you don't put numbers on the zero, and it's got like a... I don't know, like a 90% chance you'll win every time or something.
Couple of geniuses out of Moama just cracked the roulette code.
Yeah, they've got it. They've been reading up on it in books and stuff.
It's taken geniuses throughout the world to work out how to do it. But Glenn and Archie on the long run through the fucking sandhills of
Barmer,
they did it in
head. You win $6 every time if it gets up or something. So you've got to play the long game. You've got to sit there for a while. And then I think if you lose, then you've just got to like triple your money or something.
Anyway,
I don't go in there. Like, it's not a good look for me as an ambassador of the Moama Bowling Club to be sitting in there putting money on every number bar two on the roulette wheel.
Why? It's free money. You're playing with their money.
I've got to use their money to go to races and stuff, mate. Pay for me running shoes.
Don't let Archie lose his house.
He hasn't got his house yet. It's too hard to buy in the market up here. Anyway, where are you going? Because we're talking bog shit. See you guys. We'll have 20 minutes of... Road to Nowhere after this. See you next week.
Boys.
See ya.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 17 of the second season of Road to Nowhere. I'm Nick Earl, an elite level park runner who ran the fifth fastest park run in Australia last Saturday. So, kind of a big deal now. Welcome to my co-host. She's been working on becoming the local legend for the Strava segment called, wait for it, New Noosa Dash. Ellie Pashley, you are obsessed.
I didn't even hear that, but you stuffed that up.
Did I? Noosa Dash, then. Let's change it. Ellie Pashley, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Actually run past the nudie beach the other day, but there were no nudies.
Someone sent me an Instagram message saying saying you're the Strava segment you just become local legend of.
Oh, that was a joke, surely.
No, I only ran there once. The Nude Noosa Dash. That's what it's called.
Yeah. There's a nudist beach in the national park.
Okay, I thought that was just an obscure joke, but that actually happened, did it?
Yeah. That actually happened. Though there is a Strava segment.
Ali, put your fucking clothes on.
Yeah, I know. It's just embarrassing now. I think everyone's like, Ellie, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone up here, so I'm just making the most of my time.
Yeah, you can just look for it. Anyway, welcome to my other co-host. He's not Beyonce. He's not Kelly. He's the other one.
Michelle Williams.
And he didn't get the joke.
Oh, well.
That makes it worse, doesn't it? It definitely does.
This is child. I think most people didn't get the joke, but I thought
it was sort of guessed it. I guessed it. I thought, why is my face cropped? Why am I center of attention? And why do I not like being the center of attention? So, yeah, I don't know.
To be fair, it's probably cool to not know much about Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
I probably know too much.
Haven't they become niche now? Doesn't that happen sometimes?
Not that kind of music.
Probably not.
Yeah.
It's very, hottest hits, number one.
So fresh. 2001. So fresh. With definitely a real bad graphic design on the front of the CD.
what's your favorite Destiny's Child song, Ellie?
That's a hard question.
Not a true fan.
I used to have the CD for sure.
Okay, because I didn't.
It's hard to remember what was Destiny's Child and then what was just Beyonce.
Survivor was Destiny's
Child. Yeah, Survivor. That was, I don't think that's my favorite song.
No, hang on. Well, I'm just going to check out the meme.
What about No Scrubs? That was pretty good.
Oh, that's a cracker, actually. So, yeah.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Bills, that Bills song.
How does that go?
I'm not singing.
I do not want to hear this.
I have almost got you there.
There's always a pause before you, how does that go? And there's always like, oh, no, I'm not doing that.
Should I? No.
The one on the thing that Heaps Good Runners sent me was Bootylicious, Bills, 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 and Survivor, and Say My Name.
Yeah, Bills, Bills, Bills was good. I didn't really like Say My Name that much.
Say My Name. That one, oh, right?
That's it. Okay. In my head, then I had the Say My Name by, what's that other one? By Florence and the Machine. Is it Say My Name?
How's that one go?
Oh, yeah.
Not doing it, but work it out in your head.
It's basically just, she says, she sort of yells, Say My Name.
Yeah.
Oh, I work that one out. My name.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, all right. Like, anyway, enough of this. Ellie.
My cochlea is just erupted.
Your what?
Deliberately. That was one step ahead of the joke. I'll just set you up.
About my Earl Street reps actually later. So that's on theme. All right. Enough of this already. Ellie, tell us about your training week up in Noosa.
Yeah, so we were lucky we escaped Victoria just in time by the sounds of things. So I had my first session of the week was on Wednesday. So I did a pretty big long run workout on Sunday. So then I had two easy days between that and the workout, which was 14 by 1K. And I had to alternate between 3:15s and 3:10s with 90 seconds rest. So I argued with Julian a bit about this one.
Standing recovery?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Just like walking around at the end. So Jules and Bree and I drove down to the track at Sunshine Coast University, which is a really nice track, actually. It's quite firm and they've got like this big sport complex there. It's pretty cool. And we had the track to ourselves. So we, warmed up around the uni and then I'm just trying to get into my Strava, sorry, if you're wondering why I'm rabbiting on.
I'm professional again.
So Jules has had a pretty bad Achilles, but he decided he was going to pace me for these reps, which was...
Well, on his feet or the bike?
On his feet.
Wow.
On his feet, on his bike.
Yeah. So he said he was just going to jump in for 400s or so and see how he felt. And he actually, I think he felt pretty good while he was running because he warmed up and then running fast in super shoes. I think his Achilles is okay, but he was not in a good way after it. But yeah, we did. So the idea was we started with the slower one, 3:15, and then did the 3:10 and just kept alternating. So my first rep says 3:07, but I think that wasn't right because I had to press my watch twice to start it. So the first one was about 3:11, I think, which was still a little quick. And then I went 3:10, 3:17. Oh, no. Hang on. 3:11, 3:08, 3:14, 3:12, 3:14, 3:09, 3:15, 3:09, 3:15, 3:11, 3:15, 3:08, 3:13, 3:03.
Wow, that's too quick. What'd you do that for?
Oh, that was the last one. I was being a last rep hero.
Last rep hero. Wow. Nick, you can't talk. That's something you would do that. Something like that.
I am very sensible on my reps.
I'm the only sensible one on this podcast.
Yeah.
That's
great. I argued with Jules before this because I thought this was too hard, but I probably underestimated the 90-second rest. And I just looked back at when we were in Cairns and we were doing 8 by a K in 3:15, and that felt like good amount hard. And then
was that
60 seconds and it was a lot hotter.
That extra 30 seconds does help
a lot. It makes a difference.
Definitely.
And just being a bit cooler, and I had Brie, she's 22 weeks pregnant, she was jumping in and out for 200s, which was awesome.
Oh wow,
it was very impressive. Oh, yeah, cool.
Draft,
so that was
two people.
Yeah. I know. So that was, they were really good, actually. They were really helpful. I felt pretty good. So Jules was kind of trying to control me a bit because I kept accidentally running too fast. But
jeez.
That I had to stay under control and I wasn't allowed to push it and do anything stupid. And then he took me through the first lap on like 3-minute pace or something. So that was a good confidence boost of that session.
That's great.
I didn't know that I'd be able to do it. And then I just jogged until Saturday. And then on So we're doing a 10-day cycle at the moment. So this week I didn't really have a long run because my long run was today. So on Saturday I did a 16K progressive tempo. And we just did this around a housing estate right near where we're staying called Noosa Waters, which is like a 4K loop. And it's pretty much perfect. There's one little footbridge you have to go over that's a bit dodgy, and then one busy road that you have to kind of come onto for a section. But the idea was each 4K change pace. So first lap 335, then 330, then 325, then 320. And I went through, I think I went 334,
329,
324.
Oh, no.
And then
324. Oh, no. Your internet just went, Ellie, there.
Oh, have you lost me?
Oh, you're back. Yeah, you just went super slow there for a second. Honestly, when that happens,
I find it. I've got such an immature sense of humor, and you just you got to listen back one day and just hear what you sound like.
I'll put my phone on the windowsill.
Well, I'm okay. So you went 334, 330, 324,
316
for
yeah.
the 4K paces. That's
4K loops. Yeah. So I averaged 326 for the 16K.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was another. Like those two are two sessions that, yeah, they were probably better than what I've ever done before in a marathon build up. So that was good. That was fun.
What was the temperature like at this time, Ellie?
This was, I can't really remember Saturday morning. It got pretty warm. When we started, it was quite cool because I think it was overcast that morning. And then by the end, it was getting warm. But it's only really low 20s here at the moment, but I mean, it's a different kind of temperature. It's a different kind of heat because of the humidity. So we've been swimming every day, and I'm like runs are. It's not hot enough that it makes it really hard, but it's hot enough that you sweat quite a lot, and
Yeah, the sweat just doesn't evaporate, so it just sits on you. Yeah,
yeah. And you'll leave the house and think, oh, it's kind of cooler this morning, but then within 400 meters of running, you're sweating. So it's a bit deceiving. But neither of them, the track was pretty hot on Tuesday, but Saturday was pretty mild, like maybe 20 degrees.
How come you're not trying to like train in sort of the hot heat of the day for your sessions to kind of get used to it? Or would that be
so you're just
trying to go for pace at the moment?
I've been doing so Sam Tebeck is a guy in South Australia who did Julian's heat plan for Doha. Yep. And I've been working with him on this. So he has made a plan for me, which Cairns was like an exposure and testing week, but he didn't want me to continue doing heat stuff from there because he was just worried that it was a little too long to maintain it.
Yeah.
So we then are now having a break until the end of next week. I'm going to start again where I'll do rugged up runs, sauna, sessions in the middle of the day. Yeah, so I'm gonna start doing the proper heat stuff then, and then the idea will be hit it really hard for 2 weeks and then do a maintenance block before we go back to Cairns, and then obviously when we go back to Cairns it'll be really hot again.
Yeah.
So it's just a little different. The others I think are doing like a maintenance block now where they're running in the heat chamber, which Joel will be able to tell you more about that because Brett's doing it. But yeah, Sam's got a slightly different theory, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're going straight up to – you're not coming back to Melbourne at all, are you?
I might come back to Melbourne for a few days after Gold Coast half.
Yeah.
And then go – then I'll fly to Cairns. But I'm going to wait and see if there's any COVID floating around. I'll probably just stay up here, to be honest, because it's – I'm worried about going home and then getting stuck and not being able to get – to Cairns. So yeah
that's,
I mean, I'm sure by then it will all be fine, but I'm just gonna make that decision as it gets closer.
Yeah, and you've had two jabs, haven't you?
Yeah, I've had both my jabs, so yeah, that's good.
Yeah, definitely. So you're actually less likely to catch it if you did even end up being in an exposed spot, which is good.
Yeah, less likely to catch it and hopefully less severe, but I think
it's pretty effective, these vaccines. So that's good. Okay, what was your mileage?
157, I think. 150.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, so it was a little lower than the week before, but because I didn't have a long run, I think it was still fairly yeah. high for me.
How are the legs?
The legs are good. I felt really good last week. I did a session, a long run workout this morning, and I felt terrible. My legs didn't necessarily feel tired. I just feel tired all over. So I think I'm just, you know how you start a marathon block and you feel good, and then once the fatigue sort of catches up with you, you just feel basically crap for the rest of it.
No.
I'm in that phase now.
I don't know
what you're talking about.
I always feel great. Yes. Yeah, that's good.
Well,
good week,
Ellie.
All right. Well, tell us something.
You'll know soon, Joel.
Oh, yeah. He will.
156. Right. That's good. Seven. What were you last week again, Ellie?
Last week I was 168, I think.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So a bit of a down week this week.
157.
Surely
This week will be back up, and then next week I'll do a down week.
Yeah, okay.
So I sort of do three up, one three down. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. This sounds pretty stupid, but like I always think, you know how we just focus so much on Ks, and it's like I wonder what the difference is, you know, in your body between, you know, your 168 and 157. It's like, you know, if you could have just like been slightly more uphill or something, you know, for those, if it's. And your body could still be under just as much impact, even though it's only, say, the 9Ks less. I always think of stuff like
that. Yeah, true. And even time, like, because time, the number of hours per week varies a lot depending on.
Yeah. Like people, people fixate so much on Ks. It's like, oh, I was 10 easier by 10Ks. And it's like, well, shit, maybe not, especially if you didn't have a long run.
That's because of GPS. I reckon, 20 years ago, everyone would be talking about time for, like.
Yeah.
And kind of estimating mileage. But basically, when I was talking to Mona, he said that since GPS watches have come out and they've been doing their classic runs, they've realized that they were 10% overestimating what they were running, basically. So if you hear an old person like bang on about doing like 300 kilometer weeks or whatever, it's just a load of bollocks.
Yeah, 10% overestimating their mileage and 30% underestimating their PBs.
Underestimating.
That doesn't make sense. Undercutting.
Okay, that makes sense now. Yeah, good one, Joel.
So you're trying to say that all the old runners are cheaters, Joel?
They're fucking all cheaters. A lot of them.
I met a guy who was a steeplechaser back in the day, and he was claiming he ran 300 kilometer a week. So I was like, what a load of crap. And I was like, what's your steeplechase PB? He was like, oh, I never actually hit a good one. It was like 920 something. I was like, you're hitting 300 Ks a week and you can only manage, and you didn't get injured and you could only manage 920. You're a crap runner.
Some of the Japanese guys run like 300 Ks a week.
That's disgusting.
I don't think they do, though.
They do.
No, I think they do. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're on Strava.
Because they do. They do like this three runs a day. Sort of thing. It's like morning, lunch, and night runs.
And some of their runs will be like 6 minute Ks, yeah. And they'll just run around a footy oval for 12 Ks at that pace. But
yeah, I guess that's what Doug Hammerlock was trying in like a marathon build up. He was just running really slow and like really big mileage. And he got injured anyway. So
yeah,
I don't think that worked. Anyway, so Joel.
Yeah, I just like giving it back to the older generation because they think that all our times are fake with our super shoes. And it's like, yeah, but look at all the brackets.
You didn't have a watch. You had a pocket watch.
Look at all your PBs. We've got brackets next to them. Like, you know, because they're all downhill courses. And
yeah,
stuff.
Like the Aussie
record. Oh, yeah. All the half marathon courses.
Yeah, literally. Isn't Mona's like Aussie record or Deeks? Who's got it actually? Is it Deeks got the Aussie record, but that was on Chicago or something, or like an elite
marathon?
Yeah, it's not like an illegal course.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, they all run like 2:15 now. Nah, I'm just talking shit, hoping that we get a bit of, you know.
There's no way Mona or Deeks listen to this.
Definitely not.
Joel, take us through your week.
I started off the week pretty shit. I've had that ITB issue. You know, I was nursing and it sort of peaked in soreness last Tuesday. Went to the tan. I like slept like shit the night before, which doesn't usually happen for me. So I sort of went into the session.
Was your knee keeping you awake?
Nah.
No? Okay.
No, it was just, I don't know. I don't really know. You know, sometimes just once a year you'll sleep like shit and you don't know why.
Yeah. There's nothing on your mind. You're just being an idiot. Yeah.
I don't know. I just couldn't. Yeah.
Maybe it was the blood moon. Was it?
Yeah. I had like nine no-dos in my pasta that night, but I don't know. Yeah.
That's a weird one.
So I went to training and we had, I did the warm up and I was sort of defeated before I even started. I just thought, this doesn't feel good and it's fucking pissing me off, this knee. So that was supposed to be a build lap and then 2x1K, 4x500. I got to the end of the build. So the build lap, you like run all the way to a K to go and then hit it really hard. And, you know, Jack, Brett and Geordie, who like I would usually sort of go with, and they just ran off up the hill and I was just like, oh, this sucks. And I just sort of tried to threshold it and it was just sore. It was just uncomfortable. And then with a K to go, I started the pickup and I did like 300 meters and I saw Collis was riding behind me on the bike and I just put my hand up in the air and I just said, I'm fucking done.
So your knee was just like hurt.
It's the thing where like if I was in a race, there was a race, I would have been fine. It's not like a stressy pain where you just can't physically run. Okay. But in my head, I'm like, I've got all these races coming up. I just want this to go and it's pissing me off.
Where is the pain? Is it like underneath your kneecap?
No. It's on the outside. So it's definitely related to ITB. And I was really, really pissed off. And I just sort of got to the end of the session and everyone was still doing their reps. And I just ran. I'm like 20 minutes from home. And I just said to Smack,